The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Welcome to the podcast. It's Pat and Stu today. Glenn is off for a couple of days. He will be doing a big tour, though, coming up. You should go get tickets to it. GlennBeck.com/tour. We're going to be going all across the country and making fun of politicians, probably like Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, and I don't know, maybe there's some Elizabeth Warren material we can dig up. I don't know. It's going to be hard.
There's almost nothing to make fun of there.
No, it's hard. So difficult.
Yeah.
But that's coming up. GlennBeck.com/tour is the place to go for it. Today on the podcast, we are talking about Saudi Arabia. The situation continues. It's more and more bizarre. We have new details on that and how that is going down. Getting closer and closer to some sort of conclusion, but it's still one of the strangest stories I think I can remember in the entire time doing the show. I mean, it's very, very bizarre. We also have some odd inconsistencies in the Me Too movement that we noticed, and we go through some false accusations and some very real ones that have been completely eliminated by the left. They seem to remember what they want to remember.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've noticed that, Pat. We talk about, we've got some new stuff with Ted Cruz and Beto in Texas, and Chewing the Fat with Jeffy. Now, Chewing the Fat with Jeffy is not a commentary on his weight.
Not at all. I don't even know where people get that.
It's so weird.
What?
I guess the word fat is the same as if you were calling someone overweight, but that's not how we're using it. We're using
I just got that. I didn't even realize that context existed.
I think that's what it is.
Okay, that might be... All right.
But you can subscribe to not only the Pat Gray Unleashed podcast right now, also Chewing the Fat with Jeffy. You can go there right now and subscribe and get a podcast every day. But Jeffy gives us, shockingly enough, he gave us some food updates that you may want to know about. Real surprise. All of that is on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Thursday, October 18th. Glenn Beck.
Pat Gray, Stu Begrier for Glenn today, who is doing a triathlon, right? Off the coast of South Africa.
South Africa.
Today. So it's kind of cool.
You've seen the physical transformation.
Oh, he's been training for this for I don't know how long.
Yeah.
And he's in incredible.
Looks fantastic.
Incredible condition.
A really healthy guy.
Now. Oh, yeah.
And makes you feel bad about yourself. Sometimes I'll have a meal that's a little bit off, or maybe I won't exercise for
a
day.
Right.
And you see that Glenn does not do those things anymore. You can tell. You can tell. So I feel like his time's going to be pretty solid.
All right. 888-727-BECK with your comments and questions. And maybe you have some questions like we do on this Saudi Arabian killing. I don't know why we haven't nuked Riyadh yet.
Right.
I don't know why.
I mean, a journalist was killed.
Yeah.
That much we kind of know.
So usually when that happens, we've destroyed the country by now.
It's usually what you do.
Right? Mm-hmm. You just willy-nilly start launching missiles at it.
I love the way the media reacts to this stuff. The criticism, the main criticism of Donald Trump since he's been in the public eye in politics is that he reacts too quickly. he just jumps into everything, and he's constantly a loose cannon. He might nuke everybody.
Shoots
now it's like,
hip.
Why isn't he nuking everybody?
Right. he's actually trying to gather facts?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
I mean, look, it to me sure looks like something really
bad.
But again, all of this comes from Turkish sources. Turkish sources with an incentive to make Saudi Arabia look as bad as possible. So until we actually have the evidence, or at least our intelligence services have the evidence, it's hard to jump to a conclusion and do anything drastic. And the criticism that is coming in of Trump is he's saying, well, look, we've asked for the video. We've asked for the audio that supposedly exists that's been described in media reports, but we don't have it yet.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked to them about it. We're investigating. We sent Mike Pompeo over there to talk to them about it. I mean, I think the same people who we heard for years and years and years and years, we did not do enough research in to figure out if there was weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And including Donald Trump, by the way, who was leading that at the time, or at least commenting publicly a lot on it. now we're hearing from the same media people that we should be jumping immediately to, we absolutely know what happened, and how come we haven't punished Saudi Arabia yet?
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that that's been the transformation of the news, is that everything now is seen through a Trump prism.
And clearly, the Saudi Arabian explanations have been suspect. There's no, first of all, they didn't know anything about it. First, well, he was gone. He left. We don't know where he went.
Oops.
Well, we never saw him leave out the front door. Do you have another? Yeah, he went out the back window. I don't know. And then it's, well, okay, yeah, he's dead. We killed him accidentally during an interrogation gone bad.
Though I will say, even that is a report from CNN about going to announce. They have not announced
it. And they haven't yet.
Right. They have not announced that. They've not come out and said that that's true. That is a report from sources to CNN who said they will be coming out to do it, or they're considering doing that, but they haven't done it yet.
And how do you kill a guy during an interrogation gone bad? I meant to ask you what you were doing last Thursday, and instead, cut your head open with a bone saw. Oh,
it does happen.
Darn it, I slipped.
Do you know how many times I have fallen with my bone saw and sawed up someone into tiny little pieces and put them in suitcases? It's happened to me.
Over and over again?
50 times in the last 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
I'm estimating.
Wow.
Could be 60, could be 20.
Well, you don't keep track of every single time something like that happens. No, I mean, why would you?
I mean, this is why I subscribe to a suitcase delivery service that drops off, a few dozen a day.
The parts in the suitcase and then deliver it to a private plane that takes off.
Maybe I'm the bad guy here, okay? Maybe I'm the bad guy. I happen to run around a lot with my bone saw, okay?
And I don't think that makes you a bad guy.
I don't think so.
I don't think it does.
Do I occasionally fall on one or two individuals?
And did your mom probably suggest, Stu, don't be running around the house with a bone saw?
You know, she did.
You can put someone's eye out.
She also said, don't eat sugary cereal, and I do that now,
too. That too.
You know, we grow up, we get responsibility for our lives, and you start making decisions as an adult, and my decision is I'm going to carry my bone saw around, and occasionally my footing isn't so secure.
So sue me. Right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
At least I'm going through the right steps of cutting them up into little pieces and putting them into suitcases. And I think that's
you're cleaning
that's
up
you
after yourself.
Yeah.
That's all you can do is clean up the mess afterward.
That's all you can do.
And it's interesting, too, that the media is making a big deal out of every single time they talk about this guy, they talk about him as if he's an American, because they always say Washington Post reporter.
Right.
Jamal Khashoggi. I think he contributed to the Washington Post. Is he actually a staff member of the Washington Post?
He's a columnist, wasn't he? And it's relatively new.
Yeah.
Because he had left. There was a lot of problems over there. He realized he might be on the wrong side of whatever internal craziness was going on in Saudi Arabia. So that's fairly new. And, critics of Saudi Arabia, I think, have a place in the American media that is just, right? Like, I mean, I think it's important that we are able to air those things. But also, there's a lot of opposition to them, and people don't, I mean, remember Saudi Arabia was like the main accusation made by Michael Moore in Fahrenheit 9/11 was the first one? He's made he's tried to capitalize over that so many times, I can't remember which one it is now. But Fahrenheit 9/11, the first one, the biggest political documentary of all time. But in that was just a giant conspiracy theory about how the Bushes knew this guy like 50 years ago,
and
he's working with this, and they're working with this group that's working with the Saudis, and it was all about defending the Saudis, and that's why you don't know the truth about 9/11.
Right.
So this is not a new accusation when it comes to Republicans working with Saudi Arabia, but every president has worked with them for a very long time, and it's something that we've been critical about for a long time.
Well, they've been our ally since 1933, I think. A really long time. This goes back to the FDR administration. So it's not just Trump who's been friendly, I guess, with Saudi Arabia. Certainly Bush was always accused of that, being too friendly with Saudi Arabia. But Barack Obama was plenty friendly with them, too.
Exactly. I mean, they've been allies for a long time.
And there is no way that Barack Obama would have done anything severe to Saudi Arabia by this point, either. And he wouldn't have done anything about this.
It's a great point, and it shows the problem with 90% of the media coverage today. The difference there is that they perceive Barack Obama as this intellectual, deep thinker who is pensive, right? I mean, remember, I'm bringing up Fahrenheit 9/11 again. The big one of the other big criticisms of this was Bush was in a school when he found out about 9/11. And he sat there and he let the kids finish the book. And then it took the call, and it took him like 9 minutes before he walked out of the room. Remember this accusation?
Yes.
And they showed a large chunk of it, and it was a big deal at the time. You know, but they saw Bush as this bad guy who was incompetent. Barack Obama waited, 78 days when he knew where Osama bin Laden was before he did anything? And he was universally praised for this decision. It was the most difficult decision in 500
years.
Charlemagne.
It was the toughest decision made since Charlemagne.
Charlemagne. To go get the worst criminal on earth is a tough decision in the minds of people who want to praise.
It's a decision, by the way, we made on about 9/12/2001.
Yeah,
to kill the guy.
Right. You know, tens of thousands of military members signed up just to do that.
Yeah,
they all knew. I mean, yes, of course there was risk in a mission like that, but this is risk. You talk to any military member, especially people who were serving at that time, and they'll tell you that was basically the reason they got into it.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, a lot of people got in just to hopefully get the opportunity to take that shot. So it was not a difficult decision. But Barack Obama was an intellectual thinker. He was a deep thinker that was just considering all these options and weighing all these impossible choices. And he finally came to the conclusion to go and act on this. The opposite is what they feel about Trump. You know, that the fact that Trump is going out there and saying, wait a minute, let's hold on a second. Let's get this evidence. Let's figure out exactly what's going on. Let's investigate this before we act irrationally. If Barack Obama was doing that, it would be seen as he's a deep thinker. He's not being reactionary. With Trump, it's that he doesn't care. It's all about money. And it's all about Saudi Arabia because Jared Kushner likes Saudi Arabia or something. It's just, you know, the overwhelming problem is that everybody seems to see everything through the lens of this one individual on our planet. They just are completely obsessed with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And I just don't, I can't connect to that. I think as a person who's a small government guy, I don't want the president to have that much of a role in our lives, just fundamentally, whether it's Barack Obama or Donald Trump. But, you know, CNN, I think, they've made a decision, and MSNBC is certainly on this board, and pretty much every other media source, is that this is what we do. All we do is talk about every issue and how it relates to Donald Trump. This is a man who was murdered, potentially cut up into little pieces, maybe by a mistake of falling with your bone saw, but something happened there.
Mm-hmm.
And all we could talk about is why Donald Trump is acting the way he's acting. Well, isn't there more of a story here? Maybe that's the story you run in 3 weeks. When you're looking back at this incident, but like, isn't the story now much more about the details of the incident and what happened? We're still in that stage.
Yeah, it should be. Breaking news now. Chicago Tribune is reporting the United States just received a payment of $100 million from Saudi Arabia. Actually, we got it on Tuesday, the same day Secretary of State Mike Pompeo arrived in Riyadh to discuss the disappearance of Khashoggi. Saudi Arabia publicly pledged the payment to support U.S. stabilization efforts in northeastern Syria. So I'm sure that this will be twisted into, oh, we're not doing anything to them because they just paid us $100 million.
Of course. But they're always paying us $100 million.
Yes.
This is our relationship with them.
It is.
They send us a lot of money and we send them stuff. That's kind of, I mean, look, that is, it's not completely insignificant to the relationship, right? I mean, there are these considerations. And that is why when you're making a decision as the president of the United States, your decision is not solely based on, you know, what the media wants you to do, right? Like, it's about American interests. And that should always be the primary choice. If what the idea, at the end of the day, if American interests are harmed long term by a decision you might make, you have to take that into consideration. It has to be your top priority. Your top priority is not adjudicating murders in Turkey. Right, like you know, I don't know if anybody knows this, but we a lot of countries that we're dealing with are murdering people all the time. You know, how often do we hear that we should talk to North Korea before? When now that Trump is doing it, no one wants him to talk to North Korea anymore. So suddenly, like, that's off the table now. I mean, this guy's been doing much worse things all over the world. Terrible, terrible things are happening all the time. The fact that this guy is a journalist or a columnist is a big part of the reason why. You know, I think the media cares so much about it. And they're prioritizing it over, you know, some slaughter in Africa or some terrible thing that's happened in Russia, right? Like this is a journalist that they knew that was from, that wound up working for an American newspaper. So it is a big story, and the details around it are so crazy, like such a 24 storyline, that I can understand why it captures the interest. But being patient and making sure you understand the actual facts of the situation before you act is not a negative in this
situation. Yeah, there's a lot at stake here. A lot at stake. I mean, if you just start willy-nilly throwing on sanctions on Saudi Arabia, they're going to retaliate. And it's going to cost not us as much, but the rest of the world is going to suffer in oil. That's what they've already threatened. All right, go ahead and punish us, and we'll cut off your oil supply. Well, I think we get scant little from them, but other people get a lot. Europe gets a lot of oil from Saudi Arabia. So, yeah, you want to make sure you got all your T's crossed and I's dotted before you take any severe action, I would think.
Yeah, and look, it's a global market anyway. I mean, so it all affects, each part of it affects the other parts. And, you know, it's something to consider. Though, I mean, I think making a principled moral decision outweighs that a lot of times. But American interests have to be factored in the equation. I think we've seen that happening too infrequently over the past few decades. And that should start again.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Can I hit you up with one quick thing on the Saudi Arabia situation?
Yeah.
Is it possible for us to settle on a pronunciation of this man's name? I would like to call a conference of everyone
of
in the
all
world,
media.
All media.
Mm-hmm.
What are we supposed to call this guy? Because I
interesting.
Heard Khashoggi initially.
Yeah.
And I heard that one on CNN.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're supposed to. CNN is the name, first name in news, right? I mean, this is the big,
yes.
is the big one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then I heard Khashoggi. Now,
Khashoggi. Yes,
right. Khashoggi is the one that I thought was like the main.
That's what I thought.
Right, I thought that was
because we've
the
been
one.
Hearing that name since the '80s with Adnan Khashoggi, who was a big arms dealer.
Yeah, and he was mentioned in the Iran-Contra hearings.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a name that's been. But it was Khashoggi.
Yep.
But that's not a determining factor anymore. Like if you call it Copenhagen for 500 years, it just turns to Copenhagen one day.
Right, just everybody starts saying Copenhagen.
So it's Kabul. It's Kabul. It's Kabul. It's Kabul.
No, it's Kabul. It's Qatar. It's Qatar. Nope, it's Qatar.
And then it was Gutter for a while. Remember, it was Gutter for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how this happens. Osama bin Laden. Then it was Usama bin Laden. It was Al Qaeda.
Al Qaeda.
And
Al Qaeda.
Al Qaeda. And it was Q U I D A and Q A E D A, all different spellings. I don't understand it. So I heard Khashoggi initially, then Khashoggi, and now on the way in today, I heard a New York Times. Person say Khashoggi.
Oh, you really?
Khashoggi. It's a whole new one, and now we're like a week into this story, and there's already three different pronunciations of this guy's name.
Mm.
Can we settle on something? If we want to call him Bob, I'm fine with that. You want to ask? I mean, what's his first name? Jamal. I'm fine. Just let's call him Jamal. Jamal was killed at the embassy. We can all just say, hey, it was Jamal, and we'll just all know it's Jamal. Khashoggi, or Khashoggi, and then whatever the pronunciation is tomorrow.
But you're right. We got to get together on that because that drives me out of my mind.
It really is irritating.
Yeah, it is. It is. I never understood the Usama thing. How did that happen? Why did that happen?
Because it's even less explicable, right? Here you have a situation where it's the name is spelled the same, but we're pronouncing it different. At least you can understand that. Osama went to Usama. They changed a letter. They just said, no, it's not a no. It's an U. It's a U now. The guy went from like mid-range pick in kickball to last pick. I don't. It's like, when does this happen? You're just changing the guy's dead.
And no one ever explained it either.
No.
No one ever said, you know, Osama's wrong. It should be Usama. Usama.
Why?
What? Why?
No.
No, it just started, and the people just started using it. Very strange.
It is very strange. And like some of it, I guess I understand. Like, for example, here we say the tiny little country that James Bond goes to the casino is Monaco, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're over there, they call it Monaco. It's
really?
Monaco. Everyone calls it Monaco.
No, I've never heard that
pronunciation. Here's another one. Here we say Mazda for the car.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen, as a Canadian sports celebrity, I do quite often to Toronto Blue Jays games on the radio, they say Mazda. It's Mazda of Toronto.
That's really irritating.
Really?
I I wouldn't listen to that.
I would say, I mean, wouldn't you be pissed off if you're Mazda?
Yes.
Don't call us Mazda. We're not Mazda. That's not who we are.
I've also noticed the Jaguars are being called Jaguar.
Jaguar.
On now, the commercials. On the Jaguar? What?
It's like they, like if you come up with a name on your own, maybe you can describe to us what how it's pronounced. But mm-hmm. when it's a word we already know, it's
and
Jaguar's
we've been saying
a word.
For 100 years.
Yeah.
Stop it.
It's an animal.
Yes. And it's not just a car. It's an animal, too.
Right.
And nobody ever says Jaguars.
The Jacksonville Jaguars. No, I think that's, see, I think that's Jaguar trying to seem refined, right? Like there's like a, there's something mm-hmm. there's something a little snooty about the way they pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
Jaguar is like, ah, that's that stupid animal over there ripping up my dog. And this Jaguar.
Would you be that calm
if Jaguar's over there ripping up my
animal
puppy?
Animal tearing into my dog.
Yeah, it's terrible. But luckily, I fell with my bone saw on top of it, so everything's going to be okay.
That happens.
It does.
You know.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks.
We need to warn you about something that's incredibly dangerous in our society and all too prevalent, and that's Disney princesses. We're being warned by some Hollywood actresses that there's some danger there. Keira Knightley is promoting her upcoming movie, which was produced by Disney, by the way, The Nutcracker in the Four Realms. But she told Ellen DeGeneres on Tuesday that she's not a fan of every movie the studio's produced because Disney princesses don't uphold her feminist values.
Mm.
So she has forbidden her 3-year-old daughter, Edie, from watching certain movies like Cinderella, which has been banned in her household because she waits around for a rich guy to rescue her. And she says, don't rescue yourself, obviously. And this is the one I'm...
But she's mad because Cinderella waits to be rescued and does not rescue herself.
Yes. She doesn't pull herself out of that situation. Mm-hmm. She's also quite annoyed by The Little Mermaid. She's banned that as well. She says the songs are great, but they don't give. But don't give your voice up for a man.
Amen.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of women are doing that today.
It's the main message of the song, of really the whole entire movie, is to give up all of your rights to men and wait for them to rescue you, especially a rich guy.
That's the message you should be taking from those movies.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen Bell is also fearful that Disney princesses are sending the wrong message to her children. She's actually the voice of a Disney princess, Anna in Frozen. Wasn't that done by Kristen Bell?
Yes.
So she tells her daughters, Lincoln and Delta, that when she reads Snow White.
Delta Bell?
Yes.
And Lincoln Bell.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when she reads Snow White to them, she closes up the book and she says, every time we close Snow White, I look at my girls and ask, don't you think it's weird that Snow White didn't ask the old witch why she needed to eat the apple or where she got that apple? I say, I would never take food from a stranger, would you? And my kids are like, no. And I'm like, okay, I'm doing something right.
Yeah, you've proved it. you nailed that one there.
She did.
Kristen.
Then she'll also say, and girls, don't you think it's weird that the prince kisses Snow White without her permission? Well, no, because she's in a coma, Mom. She can't give her permission, and she'll stay in a coma if he doesn't kiss her.
Right. I mean, she's advocating for the coma to continue, right? The kiss is what brings her out of it.
Right. And Belle says, because you can't kiss someone if they're sleeping.
Well, no. I mean, most circumstances, that's true. However, this is a notable circumstance, which is why it's a movie and a book.
Right.
The reason why you know about it is because it's different than everyday life, right? There's a magical apple. Mm-hmm. There's a prince.
Right, with a magical spell on the princess.
Yes.
And she's sleeping because she can't wake up unless the prince kisses her. That's kind of the premise.
So it's a unique circumstance that perhaps your lessons don't apply to.
So silly.
So weird. You can get yourself so worked up about that. You know what I hope happens every day? Is every day when she brings breakfast to them, they ask her, well, where did this come from, mommy? I hope they just torture her with this for the rest of her life. Because, I mean, I can understand this. You know, sometimes I think even, you know, like conservatives get made fun of when they do these types of things. Like when you watch, you know, there's one cartoon that the kids were watching at one point that was, and it was just like a nonstop commercial for recycling. And it's like,
was that Captain Planet or whatever?
No, well, that one is actually a legitimate effort to change kids' minds about environmentalism. And people who created it actually talked about that. But I don't know what this one was. It might have been Peppa Pig or something. It's usually Peppa Pig. I like Peppa Pig a lot. Peppa, it was talking about, you know, recycling or something. I don't know. And how important it was. And look, there's nothing like recycling, whatever. Like, I don't have any passion for recycling. I think there's some conflicting evidence as to what good it does. There's been several studies that have shown not much, if any.
Clearly, you don't work for Alcoa.
Apparently not.
No.
But, you know, like, I don't know. Do I really need a giant commercial about environmentalism on my kids' programming?
No.
I mean, I feel like no.
No.
But, I mean, you also can get a little bit worked up about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you can get a little mm-hmm. fired up with trying to find the political messages in these things, even if they're there. I mean, kids grow up into, you know, adults that can think for themselves. And, you know, you kind of have to at some point realize that you're not going to be able to control every little bit of that. You can do your best. And I guess with her values, probably the most important thing is to point out, I mean, she's probably doing, you know, very worried about, you know, she thinks Brett Kavanaugh's are everywhere. And, and at any point, mm-hmm. there could be an assault going on. And, you know, I mean, maybe this is consistent with what she wants to pass along. To me, it's a little odd.
It is. And I remember when people were concerned, conservatives were concerned mostly, about some of these Disney movies because of the things that they put in the Disney movie. Like is it The Rescuers or The Rescuers Down Under? One of those. There's a scene where the character is going down a street on, I don't know, some type of vehicle. And there's a woman in one of the buildings they pass that's naked for just a split second.
I remember hearing
remember
about
that?
This. Yeah, yeah.
So conservatives would talk about that, and it would be, oh, stop it. You can't even see that. It's subliminal. You don't even know it's there. And then there was the Lion King scene where Simba, as a grown lion, kind of plops down on the side of a cliff, and the dust shoots up and forms the word sex. If you freeze frame it. Remember that?
Remember this, yes.
Remember that? But we were insane for talking about any of that stuff. Oh, please. That's nonsense. But you're supposed to tell your kids, you need to ask where that apple is from. Why do I need to eat the apple?
It's essentially she's saying that rape culture is happening at Disney.
Yes.
And that's a terrifying message, I would think, to send to children.
Terrifying.
I mean, although we've had this before. I mean, the one I always think about is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which is a movie I freaking love. I mean, I love mm-hmm. that movie. But how about the scene where they're just going through the tunnel and all of a sudden, like in really quick, like subliminal things, you see like a chicken get its head cut off. Like, why the hell is this in this children's movie? It's terrifying. That whole scene is terrifying.
I don't remember that scene. You
know, oh my God. Like they go through this tunnel and it's like really like psychedelic and weird. And like, it's supposed
to. I remember that being.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. Look close at what's going on in there. It's not good. There's some really
so
scary
a chicken
stuff.
Gets its head cut off.
Yeah. Like there's like a close up of. This is
why?
I'm remembering now. You're making me think. I don't know. I think it's supposed to. The scene is supposed to set the like off-putting. Like it's supposed to give you an off-putting feel, right? Like it's supposed mm-hmm. to be like everything's twisting around and like it's dimensions are almost changing and like all these strange things are happening. And you see like the scary, what was the guy's name? With the he wanted the everlasting gobstopper and he kept harassing the poor kid for it. And then he worked for Willy Wonka at the end.
Yeah, I don't remember his name.
God, I want to say Squidward, but that's SpongeBob. I got a lot of things messed up in my mind. Maybe none of this happened. No, I think, and then he's going through it, and it's supposed to give you that weird, like, you're almost dizzy feeling.
Yeah.
And they flash, like, a bunch of really fast images, and one of them's like, they just cutting a chicken's head off in the
very
middle of
strange.
It. It's very strange.
Yeah.
So we've been tortured with this stuff for a long time, and look how well we turned out. The world's fine.
Right?
Everything's going really well.
Right?
So I can't see how there'd be any downside. I guess you can get to that point where you're over parenting, right?
Oh, definitely.
And that certainly seems to be the way that things are going now. We recently started letting our son try, because I listen to Lenore Scanese a lot. She's been on the show before. She started an organization called Let Grow and Free Range Kids. And basically her mission in life is to make...
Let kids do some things?
Yeah, you don't need to helicopter parent over them all the time. She's famous for... she lived in New York, still does, I believe. And she let her 9-year-old go on the New York City subway system by himself. And she was called the worst parent in America. And my immediate reaction when I read that story initially was, she's the worst parent in America, right? Like, your 9-year-old on the subway by themselves? Like, I can't even imagine the amount of panic I would have. But then you kind of step back.
I couldn't do it.
I don't think I could do it either. But you step back and you say, well, wait a minute. Like, George Washington was like, I think he won the Revolutionary War at 8 years old or something. Like, this is... Mm-hmm. We went through a long period of time where people were... supposed to be, as kids, much more self-sufficient.
Yeah.
You know, I know when I was a kid, like, we would leave the house and we would go play at a friend's houses.
All
the time. We'd be gone the whole day.
Yeah.
And that whole thing about us coming back and, you come back when it gets dark or when the streetlights come on.
Mm-hmm.
And, we use that a lot of times to signify things were safer and better then. Well, that's not even true. I grew up in the 90s. This is like the 80s and the 90s, more the 80s, but still,
more
like, I was
dangerous
in
America
the
by far
much
than
more
now.
Much more dangerous than now. This was a much, the crime rates were all higher. Murders were higher. Kidnappings were higher. Everything was worse. School shootings were at the rate of 4 times what they are now when I was in high school. And I didn't have a minute of panic over a school shooting in my entire life. And I think we get to that point where we get so freaked out. We recently had we have our son like walking our dog, like a little chore, and he's doing it by himself, just up the street a little bit and back. And I can tell you, just that freaks me out. Like, it's everything in me not to walk to the end of my driveway and spy on him to make sure he's okay the entire time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is. That certainly isn't how it was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I somehow lived through it. I think that's the instinct there is to just make sure you're mentioning every little thing that you think could go wrong in their life so that if that thing does go wrong, you can't blame yourself. You know, it's like, it's almost a selfish instinct where you're just like, well, at least I told them. I remember telling my kid 500 times not to go down dark alleys, and they went down a dark alley, and well, it's really sad, but at least it's not my fault. That's not a really healthy instinct for a parent. I do feel like that is at the basis of it, because of course no one wants anything bad to happen to their kids. But it's additional to that. Like, you don't want to be the person who let your kid walk down some street and where something terrible happened. Because
no,
everyone's
going
to look at you and say, what the hell were you doing allowing them to walk down that street? Why weren't you there?
Yeah.
So it's like a double whammy. And I think that leads to a lot of that over-parenting stuff. And I'm sure this is the boat she's in, Kirsten Bell, right? Like, she's trying to protect. I mean, look, you're not going to say anything to a 4-year-old reading Cinderella that's going to protect them from rape culture. That's not going to occur. You're never going to be able to solve this problem you believe is so prevalent by a story you tell them after reading Cinderella or watching it.
Or The Little Mermaid, or any of these Disney movies, because they're already going to be messed up from Simba falling down and blowing the word sex into the air from the dust. That's going to mess them up enough.
A lot of teen pregnancies caused from that.
A lot. Of them.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Think of how recent this Brett Kavanaugh thing was, and absorb that story back in your mind for a moment about what we were trying to find. That Dr. Ford comes up and testifies and says, I know these people, they were there. None of those people say that they remember this incident. She didn't tell anybody for a very long period of time. She couldn't remember where the house was. She couldn't remember whose house it was. She couldn't remember how she got there. She couldn't remember how she got back. What
day
it happened. What month
it
happened.
Right.
None of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we were basically, the insinuation from the media was, if, let's say, one of the witnesses she named instead came out and said, yeah, I remember that party, and I remember her being really shook up, and she left, and I remember it being very strange, and she was weird for the next 3 weeks. She was just like, you know, very distant, and I didn't know what was going on, and now I know. If you would have had just that, I think the media would have been in, I mean, they already were in full and conviction mode, but I don't think Collins and Flake would have held on through something like that. Just one person saying one thing, not with as a witnessing the incident, but just she heard about it in the general time period. Just one. We're looking for one who even knew that the party occurred. Not that the incident happened, just that the party occurred. Listen to this. This is from 1999 from Slate, the hardcore right-wing publication of Slate, talking about the accusation of rape. Not sexual assault, not sexual harassment, but rape against Bill Clinton. Broderick's initial denials indicate only that she shunned publicity. That's why she never reported the rape, rebuffed advances from Clinton's political enemies, who in 1992 urged her to go public. So they had asked Broderick about this in 1992 when he was running for president the first time. And she said, no, I'm not going to tell my story. So she had an opportunity to take down this president and did not decide to do so. She lied to Paula Jones' lawyers about the incident to get out of talking about it. She eventually told the FBI the truth in 1998 only because her son, a lawyer, advised her against lying to federal investigators. So she didn't want to tell the story to tear down the president. She told the story because she thought she was going to get like perjury charges or something against her. Five people say Broderick told them about the rape immediately after it occurred.
Wow.
So not looking for one person who was at the hotel or at the party in the Kavanaugh case. She had five people that she told about the rape immediately after it occurred. A friend and coworker named Norma Kelsey says 21 years ago, she found a dazed Broderick with a bloodied lip and torn pantyhose in their shared hotel room. Broderick explained that Clinton had just raped her. Clinton is supposed to have bitten her on the lip right before raping her. Her current husband, then her lover, says Broderick told him about the rape as well within a few days of the event. Broderick did not remember the date of the rape. And that's the one similarity here. Though she did supply the name of the hotel, the Camelot, and the reason she was visiting Little Rock, a nursing home seminar. She also says that Clinton pointed to a ramshackle prison outside the hotel room window before he raped her and said he planned to renovate it. So Clinton, in the middle of about to go through a rape, is like, by the way, I'm going to renovate that prison over there. Dork. NBC News found a date in which a nursing home seminar was held at the Camelot Hotel, and records show that Broderick attended. Newspaper reports suggest that Clinton was in the area and had no official commitments in the early morning when the rape is supposed to have occurred. There was a prison outside the hotel window.
Wow.
That is 1,000 times the amount of even alleged evidence that occurred with Dr. Ford and Brett Kavanaugh. And yet that was ignored until the very second the Clinton family became useless to the Democrats. And now, you'll see occasional people saying, we should have handled that differently, or I'm with you guys. That's a total Me Too moment. That only happens now after they never want to hear either one of their stories ever again. To them, Hillary Clinton and the Clinton family is not guilty of this rape. It's not guilty of that. They're guilty of blowing an election to Donald Trump. And that's why they have no more use for them. But, I mean, Bill Clinton goes along and still makes big-level speeches.
Oh, yeah.
He's able to do all of these things. This is a much more credible accusation. And Paula Jones had a lot of evidence, too, including corroborating witnesses of what happened there. It's a situation with a double standard that is so bizarre. And the fact that that the media actually thinks we should take their current stance seriously on this stuff is insane. The stance is and always has been, you should be taken seriously when you report a crime against somebody else. That crime should be go through the legal system with actual standards. And if they're held responsible for this crime, then we can all understand what happened. I mean, that's the system we have. It's the best in the world. And the idea that we're now supposed to go through these kangaroo courts and even worse than that. I mean, even worse than the kangaroo courts, it's like, I don't know. Kind of seems like maybe he could have done it is now our standard. That's insanity. It's insanity.
And yet you have Hillary Clinton speaking out against Brett Kavanaugh and defending her husband. And they just asked her what the difference was between the two. And she said, well, yeah, they're completely different because my husband's improprieties were looked into for a really long time. This was looked into for a week. Well, there was substantial evidence, as you just pointed out, into all of the claims made by other women and Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. And the other difference is she went after and tried to destroy every single one of the accusers. That was a big difference. Nobody's trying to destroy Christine Blasey Ford. Nobody's trying to destroy even the others that are making outrageous allegations against him that are completely uncorroborated.
The exception of Michael Avenatti, which I think the Democrats are currently trying to destroy.
Yes.
Because they are so pissed off about that. And they do not want him running for president. And they do not want the circus there.
Oh,
so they are very much trying to destroy him at this point.
But what a clown he is.
He is. Yeah.
I mean it's embarrassing.
You thought Michael Cohen was a bad lawyer. And then Michael Avenatti introduced himself to you.
But it's so bad that even Trevor Noah, who's the... I mean, I thought Jon Stewart was unfunny. This guy is unfunny to about the 1 millionth power. But Trevor Noah on Comedy Central the other night took on Hillary Clinton. And, you know, to his credit, actually said some accurate things about her. And whether or not she's the best person to be speaking out on sexual allegations. Here's what he said.
In retrospect, do you think Bill should have resigned in the wake of the Monica Lewinsky scandal?
Absolutely not.
It wasn't an abuse of power?
No, no.
There are people who look at the incidents of the 90s and they say a president of the United States cannot have a consensual relationship with an intern. The power imbalance is too great.
Who was an adult. But let me ask you this. Where's the investigation of the current incumbent?
No, Hillary. Oh, I'm sorry, man. Look, here's the thing. That's not cool. Maybe it was different in the 90s, but today I think we're all understanding that there's a massive power imbalance between an intern and the president of the United States, right? I mean, forget intern. A president with anyone is a power imbalance. Like, if President Obama texted me, hey, Trevor, you up? I'd have to let him smash. Yeah. And then he'd be like, actually, I just want to know if you're watching the game. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, I knew that. I knew that. Of course I did. Yeah, yeah. And what's also not cool is Hillary trying to deflect and make this about Trump. Like, you're not in a position to be throwing stones at someone, Hillary, especially when you're literally sitting in a glass house.
Other than the power dynamic thing, what he is saying there is really amazing because nobody takes her on like that on the left. But I don't buy into the power dynamic that nobody can say a no to the president of the United States. Of course you could.
I mean, wouldn't you certainly try to raise your children to grow up to be people that would say no to the president of the United States?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You don't let him do whatever he wants to because he's the president.
And this is a side thing and may be a longer conversation, but Monica Lewinsky is not a Me Too victim. She is not.
No. Right.
She was a willing participant in an old fashioned affair is mm-hmm. what she was.
And could have said no.
She could have said no. She absolutely should have said no. Mm-hmm. He obviously should have said no. And from his perspective, you know, he's the president of the United States. He is doing things that he should not be doing. But like, it's totally different than Juanita Broderick or Paula Jones. Totally. These are totally different stories. She was she was in love with the guy. She told Linda Tripp she was in love with him. Like, she thought that they eventually were going to be together and be married. And this was not a situation in which she was like, oh, wow, I'm scared for my career, for example. Like, that's the thing, though. It's a power imbalance. Well, there's an implication, even if the person doesn't do it, there's an implication that maybe they'll ruin your career if you don't hook up with them. Which, first of all, is prosecuting a crime before it occurs. Like, you're just assuming the person's going to commit a crime and ruin your career over sexual stuff. But that's a whole different story. That's not what happened here. She was a willing participant in an affair. She was into it.
Yep.
And she was also, by the way, and the one point that is valid from Hillary there is she was an adult. We should not be excusing all actions by 23-year-old women, right? Or 23-year-old men. You are responsible for your own actions at that time.
No question.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. And don't forget, rate us on iTunes.
there's an interesting thing from the New York Times today, and it is they do this little podcast in the morning called The Daily, and today's was about Louis C.K. and whether Louis C.K. should be allowed back on stage.
Ever?
Ever.
He did things in front of girls.
Right.
After he asked him if he could.
Yeah, and that is...
And they said yes.
An odd part of this saga with him in particular is that there doesn't seem to be much of an... much, if any, allegations of him doing something that...
Against anybody's will.
No. Right. Like, he would ask, they'd say yes. Or there was one case where he... Again, like, this is the level of the accusation here. He was accused of calling up someone, and while he was on the phone with the woman, the woman believed that he was pleasuring himself while on the phone with her because I guess he was breathing heavy or something.
And she couldn't hang up because of the power dynamic?
The power dynamic, absolutely.
Yeah.
The power dynamic makes you do all sorts of things.
Okay, because as a comedian... Mm-hmm. He wields incredible power
right.
in this country.
Now, look.
Incredible. He could have her fired at any job in the nation. Any job.
Your sarcasm is just reality in this situation. Like, it's just, no, it's like, what? That's actually what they were saying. They're saying that she...
Oh, my gosh.
Some of the people were other comedians. And at one point, one of the accusations was he walked up to another comedian and they were talking. And I guess he thought there was a vibe there or something. Invited her back to his trailer to do his thing in front of her, which apparently was his shtick.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, actually, you know, you have a wife and a child and you should think about that. And he said, I know. I'm sorry. You're right. I have issues. And that's the extent of the allegation. He didn't do it. He didn't force her to do it after that. He didn't do it. And then they had that conversation.
Gosh,
he asked her to do this thing, which
it's
is obviously,
unbelievable.
It's obviously icky. Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, he asked her to do this thing. She said no. Reminded him of his wife and child, and so he said, you're right. I have issues. I am sorry." Like is that sexual assault?
What's even the accusation there?
Right.
No, that's
he
not
asked
sexual
the question,
assault.
Which she answered. Right, and he did not pursue it after that.
It's unbelievable.
There's he admitted to being a dirtbag, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he admitted in such a general way that people kind of. He admitted to these things, and he did admit to I've done a lot of things wrong, and I've tried to figure out a way to make them right. And I think that what I just described to you is obviously wrong.
Yeah,
right. Like
it's
a wrong thing for him to be doing. However,
but is it a crime?
Is it a crime? I think the answer to that clearly is no. And the idea that Louis C.K. because he's a famous comedian. Can affect other comedians' careers is theoretically possible. But is that enough for a crime?
No.
The fact that he wants to hook up with someone who theoretically he could hurt their career if they say no, but there's not evidence that he did this to anyone. So it's
or would even do it to anyone,
right? I mean, again,
you're just making a weird assumption there.
Yeah, and we just assume the crime. Like this is the sort of stuff that Minority Report was supposed to scare us away from, right? You're not supposed to just assume people will commit crimes in the future. So he's on. Listen to this. This is the guy who runs the Comedy Cellar. Now, Comedy Cellar is famous New York comedy club. Like, it's a tiny. It's like 100 people can watch comedy there. And if you go there, you'll see a lineup of comedians every day. But it's famous for random people that are incredibly famous just stopping by. You go in there to see some comedian you never heard of. They're probably pretty good, but you got like a 1 in 3 chance. Maybe Chris Rock walks in and does a set, or Jerry Seinfeld comes in and walks a set, or Louis C.K. walks in and does a set. Well, apparently this is the first place he went as he's tried to do this. He's bounced around to several clubs around New York since, and they let him on stage. So the New York Times does an exhaustive report about trying to talk to the club owner about why you let him on stage. This is a clip about how he's trying to determine the decision. Listen.
Other people were just upset that he should ever work again. But one guy said he's a comedian. And I'm like, well, okay, when do you think he could come work again? He's like, never.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, never? He says, never. And I said, well, could you imagine any court of law handing down such a sentence? Never work again? He says, I don't care, never.
This is an admittedly provocative question, but I wonder, as the owner of this place, what you would say, particularly to a female customer who is here.
But I just want to add, I know when Bill Clinton, who was credibly obviously accused in Juanita Broderick, I mean, I think nobody will expect a warning before he shows up somewhere.
Hmm.
Nobody. Like, why were they cheering Roman Polanski as they were for years? Why were they giving him standing ovation?
The director accused of sexually abusing a young...
Not accused. He did it.
But behind all these people you're mentioning, Roman Polanski, the film director, Bill Clinton, the president, Louis C.K., the comedian, is someone who gives them a stage. And in this case, that's you.
Right, but I'm saying nobody cares that Mike Tyson, who raped or was convicted of raping somebody, performs.
You can only control the venue you control.
Yes, but it's not unusual to expect some consistency in the world. And when you see wildly inconsistent demands, if it's so obvious that the guy who masturbated in front of women and exposed himself in front of women should never work again.
That's amazing. The irrationale of, okay, but you let this guy on who did much less than they are, and you shouldn't have let this comedian perform on your stage.
Right.
And the fact that nobody cares about these other people, the same people, right, by the way, who want him to shut out Louis C.K., didn't care about Clinton, didn't care about any of these other circumstances, but he's supposed to.
Yeah, and he was really smart about this.
He
made some great points in this interview. And the New York Times reporter was just constantly trying to say, well, yeah, but you did this thing, and you allowed it, and trying to put it personally on him as to why he made the decision, which is an interesting part of the story. But, I mean, he made the point as well of, look, what is the line? We don't allow him, Louis C.K., to work. So what does that mean? Does he go on the government dole? Or can he work at other jobs? Can he work? What if Louis C.K. got hired by Walmart? Would that be okay? And I think it's a fascinating question.
Can he never support himself in life again?
And the idea that this guy has not been punished for this is insanity.
Question. Yeah.
The man was making $10 million a year, and he's probably now making, what was he making at a Comedy Cellar appearance? $50? Maybe $500? I don't know. Nothing? Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he just walks in and does it because he wants to do it. He has, paid for this in a large way. It's certainly affected his career in a big way. He's lost movies. He's lost jobs. But, I mean, we saw this with Charlottesville. There was a guy who...
And again, we're talking about a consensual act.
Yeah, a consensual
act. Every
time
he actually did it, it was consensual.
It was consensual. And there was one case in which, as we discussed, the woman
on
said
the
no.
Phone.
Another case on the phone where we don't know what happened. Another case where he started doing it and the woman left because she didn't want to be part of it. Well, good for her. Right?
Yeah.
That's what she should do. She should walk out and think he's a loser and tell all of her friends that he's a loser.
Right.
But that does not mean that he should be losing jobs 10 or 15 years later. Charlottesville is another great example of this. Look, you saw the people. We played the video and the audio of... Jews will not replace us and all these crazy chants from the real dirtbags in that Charlottesville carrying torches and, the deepest, darkest corners of the alt-right, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys who attended the rally and was in some of those videos was identified as a man who worked at a hot dog stand in California. He was fired from his job at the hot dog stand. Now, how is this a good outcome for anyone? Now, look, if he is saying to black customers, I won't serve you because you're black, obviously, we get that. But if
there's no indication that ever happened.
He did his job seemingly right for everyone. He was serving hot dogs and making hot dogs. Mm-hmm. It was not like, he was not in the high levels of finance here. And so now... We can all feel good about ourselves.
The power dynamic of a hot dog vendor, though, is such that it's too intimidating for other people.
That's true.
So
I guess now we can all feel good about ourselves for the fact that we are, instead of him having a job at a hot dog stand, instead, we will support him with our tax dollars because he's going to be at home and all these projects and programs that liberals have created over the years to support people in need are going to go to this white supremacist who can no longer hold down his job at a hot dog stand.
It's crazy.
Because we're too morally above him.
It's crazy.
I don't want to ever hang out with a guy who would go to that rally and carry a torch and say, Jews will not replace us. Never. But I mean, do what we do is we just find every one of these guys.
Do you want a Jew to replace you?
That's a question I've never considered.
Do you want that?
I would rather not be replaced by anyone, ideally. But I never have considered.
But maybe, does that include a Jew?
I guess. I don't want a Jew to replace me. or anyone else. But yeah, it does include that. But I really don't want anyone. It's just it's a weird thing we're dealing with because, you know, finding someone in a video and identifying them online gives you this sort of rush of, I've outed this terrible person and I can punish him. Who are you really punishing? I mean, are you certainly you're punishing the taxpayers of this area who now have to support this loser who actually somehow was able to hold down a job selling hot dogs and now has to sit inside probably playing Xbox while you're paying him to do it. I mean, what a win. Let's all celebrate that one. I don't know. It's a strange direction for us to be going in, is it not?
Yes. Yes, it's nuts. It's absolutely crazy. So maybe the answer is they just can't be alive anymore. I mean, it almost comes down to that, because if they can't support themselves, and certainly the state, you don't want them supported by your tax dollars.
Right.
So I guess all people who are accused just starve to death now.
Yeah.
I guess that's what it comes down to.
I guess that's the way it works. And it would be nice for us to find some consistency in this world.
It would.
You know, the fact that, like, you know, if you were to say the Me Too movement, I bet to most people, sure, you get Harvey Weinstein mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And you might get maybe Kevin Spacey or one of the other two, you know, few big stars. But what you would almost definitely get is Donald Trump and Roy Moore and Brett Kavanaugh, and every conservative or anyone even supposedly leaning right that you can think of that was accused. Those have all had huge play in the media. What's the percentage? 95% have been on the left? It's
probably
all been Hollywood and news media people. And I mean, it's been almost everyone has been in those industries, and those industries obviously lean incredibly to the left. So the idea that this is a right-wing phenomenon, I mean, it just seems like the people who are on the right pay the price for it, where people on the left, you know, don't necessarily see that the same way. And, you know, I think you have to get to a point where someone like Louis C.K., who was, I think, accused correctly of being a dirtbag, right, to his own admission, but nothing that was over this line of sexual assault, at least is not as reported. You know, you have to look at these things as they stand. I mean, Aziz Ansari is now doing shows again, and he was accused of something. You know, what's his face from the New York Times? He's back. Glenn, what the heck is his name? I don't want to get it wrong. Thrush, right? He was accused of harassing young interns and other underlings, and he's back at work. We have this weird set. Why? I mean, Mike Tyson, it's pretty clear. The man was convicted of rape, not accused.
Served time for
convicted
it.
Of rape. Spent time in prison.
Yeah.
And he's like the darling of the media. He comes on. He has the silly appearances.
Doesn't
everywhere.
Seem to have a problem going anywhere or doing anything.
And he's, I mean, and look, he served time and he's out, right?
Yeah.
And so you can make the case, as the left has made forever, that people who go in, felons should be able to come back and vote. You should be. Mm-hmm. They have programs to give felons and convicted felons and murderers jobs. Yeah, but when someone's accused of something, much less than murder, they can never work again.
And not even convicted, just accused.
Just accused.
Yeah.
It really doesn't make any sense.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.